Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Award-winning children's author and illustrator Mo Willems is the master of children's comedy that also works for mom and dad, adults. If you read Elephant and Piggy, Knuffle Bunny, the Pigeon books, you know these are stories that get at real stuff, make everybody laugh, and deliver insights into failure, friendship, empathy, the human condition, and bath time. This hour on Point, Mo Willems and children's books for all ages. You can join us on air or online where this conversation is always on. Have you read Mo Willems' books to someone small? Do your kids love it? Do you? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me now from Springfield, Massachusetts is Mo Willems, children's author and animator, three-time winner of the Caldecott Honor Award and many more awards, author of over 50 children's books, including the beloved Knuffle Bunny and Elephant and Piggy series. His most recent book is titled Nanette's Baguette. Mo Willems, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here.
So, do you write? Do you draw every day? What's your way?
I try to. I try to sketch and draw absolutely every day, and I also try to doodle, which is different than drawing. You know, drawing has a purpose. When I'm drawing, I'm trying to figure out a character or a scene or a book. When I'm doodling, I'm just sort of letting my mind go, and sometimes magic can come from that, that I can then take a doodle and turn it into a drawing and make it work for a living.
This job is so fun. You know, I've read your books. I've read them to very small children, very dear to me. But I only knew you as a name. Now, you know, just a name on the book. And yeah, I thought about where does this attitude come from? It's very interesting. Yes, it makes me laugh too. I appreciated your work a lot, but I knew nothing really about you. Introduce yourself to us, if you would, Mo. Where the heck did you come from?
That's a complicated story.
We'll take it.
But I started my career doing sketch comedy, performing quite a bit, performing improv, and I really loved comedy and sketch. I went to film school. I made animated films and found myself really enjoying animation because it was something that I could do on my own. It was something where if I needed a cast of thousands, I could just draw them.
Mm-hmm.
And then sort of a life-changing event fairly early in my career, my early 20s, I was hired as a writer and animator for Sesame Street. And up until that time, I didn't want to write for children. I wasn't really interested in children. I didn't have any. I had just finished being a child. I was done with it, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
And at Sesame Street, I really learned, A, how to write for children, but B, that that's what I loved writing about because kids have no cultural modifiers. They're new. They just arrived here. So talking about pop music or historical events is meaningless. So you're just stuck with fundamental core philosophical emotional things.
Mm-hmm.
Why is there jealousy? Why is there hate? What do I love? Can I drive a bus? The sort of fundamental Greek questions.
Yeah, I guess we don't think about that, or one might not until you get into that situation and you can't make those references. You can't skate along on pop culture references. You've got to go basic.
It's not basic. It's truer than that. You know,
yes.
It's about things that are universal. And, you know, while it's easy or it's possible to make jokes about the latest movie or the latest band or something like that, that's ephemeral. The stuff mm-hmm. that I'm writing is hopefully lasting longer.
It makes me laugh, as well as a little one in my lap. Is that why? I mean, when you have to pare it down to that, which also, as you say, and I get it, it means you go deep. But is that why these books, your books, tend to work for both kids and adults?
You know, I think I'm just very lucky. I don't know why they work, but I would say That they are funny because the characters in my books don't know that they're funny. You know, these are tragedies, horrible things happening to my characters. And we as humans, when we recognize that, we laugh at them. You know, if you were to tell Charlie Brown that he was a star of a funny strip, that would be the worst possible news for him.
Yes. What do you mean tragedies in your – these are children's books. And I've read them and I – what do you mean tragedies?
I mean, it's the emotions are huge. You know, not getting – being able to drive a bus is as terrible as it could get.
You know, if you're a pigeon who really, really, really wants to drive a bus.
Right. If that's your dream and that's really what you want to do and you're a pigeon, that – you know, being sort of face to beak with that impossibility is terrible.
That is life aspirations or ambitions that just aren't realizable.
That's right. That's right. Which, you know, again, is the pigeon condition.
Or if you're a very young girl and you've lost your stuffed rabbit.
That's right. That's right. You know, and Knuffle Bunny is one of those books. People ask me if it's a true story, and everything in the story is true except for the parts that I made up.
Meaning a bunny lost in a laundromat maybe, or something important lost somewhere in the – maybe the child knowing it and the parent not.
Right, right. I mean, that's ultimately what it's about. My job is to create – is to lie with emotional truths, you know. And I've got this odd job because primarily I write for illiterates. So I need you, my orchestra, I need you to be my conduit. You're my performer for the book.
The parent, the reader, with the tone of voice, the delivery.
Right, exactly. And if you're bored, and believe me, when my kid was little, I read some books and I was bored.
Yeah.
You read it, you know, Happy Bunny went to Happy Place and they were all happy
right,
and
right.
They didn't really forget his birthday and it was a big party. But if you're writing something or you're reading something that's a little bit weird or a little bit rock and roll, you're going to read it as in a more fun way. And then the book becomes more fun. And then the kid enjoys it more, which allows you to be more of a ham. And it's this sort of, you know, feedback loop of people being together and being willing to be silly.
And the child reading the book in a way, but really also reading the adult who's reading the book, reading the emotion in their face, reading what they're conveying.
That's right. You know, and one of the horrible things about adulthood is embarrassment. And embarrassment is a learned disease.
Yeah.
That's, you know, millions of teenagers are dying of embarrassment every year. And it's unnecessary. I sometimes do say that my books are not for children. They're for people who haven't learned how to be embarrassed yet.
What do you mean by that? What do you teach them about embarrassment? Let it go?
Well, I mean, if you have to yell at the top of your lungs, let me drive the bus.
Right. And I'm a pigeon.
Right. Yeah. At that point, you've had a temporary shamectomy.
Yes.
And that's fun.
Yes.
And the kid sees that fun. But, to see a grown, matriculated, tax-paying human being jumping up and down and flapping his or her arms, yelling about driving a bus.
Yeah.
Suddenly, the kid's like, what? What is going on with this grown-up? Usually I don't see them doing this.
And yet you are really clued into that dynamic, because just like an audience will encourage a performer, the adult will be encouraged to take the shamectomy because the child responds so vividly when they do.
Absolutely. And yeah, my job is to write 49% of the book. And your job is to do the 51%, to give it meaning, to make it performative, to make it a unique experience between you and someone you care about.
But what do you mean to lie with emotional truth?
Well, I mean, the reality of the story is irrelevant. The emotional truth is what matters. So, you know, if my daughter lost a bunny or lost a frog, or if it was in a laundromat or if it was in an airport, it doesn't matter. It is the emotion that comes from the narrative that has to be universal. You know, I mean, for example, Nanette's Baguette, my most recent book, there's nothing factual about a young frog getting a baguette for the first time.
One supposes not.
Right. It's a series of lies, but hopefully it exposes an emotional truth.
Human beings seem to me to be very, very open to that kind of lie. I mean, we're somehow just our DNA or something in the way we create narrative. We're very happy to take a crazy story if it if it rings with emotional truth, and chew on it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, we're looking for universality. That's what a story is. A story is a form of connection. Oh, yeah, I get that, even though I've never been there, seen that, done that. I empathize.
How do you know when you're sitting with a manuscript or draft that you're working on if you're in the right zone, if you're hitting the right note?
Well, there are two. One, you don't. For me, you get the muscles so you learn what doesn't mm-hmm. work. And you intuitively have a sense of what doesn't work, and you take all of that out and you hope for the best. Mm-hmm. But because I'm doing a picture book, the images and the pictures, the images and the words are so codependent. If I read a manuscript and the manuscript makes sense, there are too many words.
Mm-hmm.
And if I look at the images and the images make sense, the images are too complex, too detailed, because then the other half of that equation would not be necessary. So my job is to write incomprehensible books for illiterates.
What a way to make a living. you took a year off and traveled around the world sketching every day, I've read recently. Mm-hmm. What, right out of college, I guess.
Yes.
Did you have any idea what you were sketching for at that point?
No, I you know, I probably there was something of the guilt that I had the time to be able to do this, that I wanted to come back with some sort of document. And I was more interested in the things that surprised me and the little things that I saw than the monuments or anything like that. We published the book 15 years later called You Can Never Find a Rickshaw When It Monsoons. And I went back and revisited the book then and realized that I remembered a lot of the events that happened, but I had sort of forgotten the emotions that had come with those events. Mm.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with celebrated children's book author and illustrator Mo Willems, creator of Elephant and Piggy, Knuffle Bunny, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, and a whole lot more, master of child and adult humor. Joins us today from Springfield, Massachusetts. His latest book is Nanette's Baguette, and we will look at that in a moment. You can join us as well. What do you think? Are these books loved because they're saucy, they look simple, but in fact are subtle, sophisticated? And how does Mo Willems get that incredible range of emotion into such simple-looking stories and drawings? Do you have a Mo Willems storybook moment that cracks you up, that makes the whole family laugh? Mo, we've got a lot of people calling from around the country for you. Shall we talk with them?
Yeah, that sounds like fun.
Good. Judy in Hilbert, Wisconsin, you are on the air with Mo Willems.
Hello, Mr. Willems. It's great pleasure. Last week, I was reading to my 3-year-old grandson who was distraught that he was missing his mother, and I happened to pull off the shelf Edwina, the dinosaur who didn't know she was extinct, which wouldn't be necessarily a comforting book, but when we got to the part of Reginald von Hooby-Dooby, he collapsed and laughed.
I'm in.
I'm since been known as Grandma Hooby-Dooby. But I'd like you to speak to your... I think people underestimate the word choice that even a simple book has, and that's just a great example, and I'll take my comments off the air.
The word choice, what do you mean exactly, Judy? By word choice, do you mean Reginald von Hooby-Dooby?
Well, even that, the sound of von Hooby-Dooby. is well, delightful.
We could just say that all day.
Judy, I appreciate it. Unfortunately, in this case, I'm going to seem less clever than I am because I have a terrible memory with words and objects. So I use Hooby-Dooby as a filler. My wife basically speaks another language because I'll say, where's the Hooby-Dooby? Or I'm looking for the Boppy Flink and I know it's near the Hooby-Dooby. So when I hate naming characters, you know, it's the elephant and piggy, the pigeon. So when it came time to naming Reginald, I just put in Von Hooby Dooby as a filler, thinking I would come back and come up with a great name. And I never got around to it.
So Von Hooby Dooby just lasts and lasts and lasts. And Judy is now Grandma Hooby Dooby in Hilbert, Wisconsin. Judy, thank
That's
you.
That's awesome.
It's awesome. Thanks for your call. Lots of listeners writing on Facebook here. Mariah says, the pigeon finds a hot dog is fantastic. Well, of course. Kate says, knuffle. You say knuffle or knuffle? People say it both ways.
Well, it depends on how you pronounce it.
Well, of course. Thank you very much. How do you pronounce it, Mo?
Well, everybody knows it's knuffle.
Okay.
It's a Dutch word. It means hug or snuggle.
Yeah.
And it just never occurred to me that it would be pronounced with a silent K. But the idea that it is really separated families.
you say tomato, I say tomato.
Gives me a perverse joy.
Well, Kate loves it, but her youngest is now too old for it, so she's saving them for grandbabies, she says. Shannon says, we took Goldilocks and the Three Dinosaurs out of the library yesterday. I've read it three times so far. My two-year-old loves it. John says, my son learned to read through Elephant and Piggy, with me reading one character and him the other. We'd laugh
That's
out loud
great.
Every time.
That gives me the greatest joy. The idea, you know, that really is an honor. The idea that someone's first book that they read
yeah.
is one of your efforts gives me an immense joy. That really is a major turning point in a kid's life, because it's a form of independence. Now they don't
yes.
need mom and dad
yeah.
to have a good story.
Yeah, and to go and discover the world, learn it all.
Yeah.
Linda in Scituate, Massachusetts, you're on with Mo Willems.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mo. I'm going to have a very envious little boy who once he finds out that I've been talking to you. I have an 8-year-old in Montessori school, and I was introduced to your books last year. He reads right about a middle school level, and when he first brought them home, I thought, why is he bringing these books? He's quite past this. But it's like every week he will bring at least one of them home in addition to some others. And then I started looking in them, and he loves the facial expressions and the silliness of the circumstances, and he identifies with them because there's so much more to them than they appear. And even the stained glass window in his school library has the characters incorporated into that window
wow.
right next to it.
Wow.
And, you know, it's every progress report he's ever had, it always states what an empathic, caring little person he is. And I can't help but think that all of this is tied together. And he loves their stories. And, you know, you get so much out of them.
Thank you, Linda. That really makes me feel really good. And, you know, I would say just because you can read at a certain level doesn't mean that you can't take pleasure in everything. I mean, you know, there's a wide bench. I am 49, but I read at a 52-year-old level.
Oh, very good, Mo.
Yeah, but I will still read books for people in their early 30s.
Well, you're very open-hearted. And your characters are in stained glass windows in libraries like the saints of old, Mo Willems.
That's a little wacky.
Linda, thank you very much for that. I want to come back to that empathy piece. It's very important to Mo Willems.
Thank you, Linda.
But first, David in Dearborn, Michigan. David, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, Tom. I was just I just turned on the show, and the timing is great. I wanted to thank Mr. Willems for how well he writes and the way you guys are describing it so well. My daughter, for her daily homework assignment the other day, or just yesterday, had to write, read a fictional story and write about the why and the how and what happened and everything. So she picked Knuffle Bunny, and usually she has to help me guide her with it about, you know, let's start at the beginning and what happened and everything. But she was able to do it no problem because the message and the timeline worked so well, and she just got it, and she wrote it all out by herself, and it was just a really fun experience for both of us. So
that's awesome.
To turn on the radio and hear this today and listen to you pick his brain about his process has just been very satisfying and delightful. Thank you.
David, may I ask you, there in Dearborn, in Knuffle
yeah.
Bunny, at the moment where the little girl realizes the bunny is left behind at the laundromat in the washer, dryer, or whatever, and her dad doesn't, and she can't talk yet, so she's trying to convey this. He doesn't get it. Did you go to some self-reflection there, Dave, as a father? Did you ever have a moment like that?
Yes. many times, actually. Just my daughter is she's almost 7, and I have a 3-year-old, so mm-hmm. I deal with those kinds of situations with different intensities because of how they process a sense of loss or a sense of detachment. And I've definitely had the run back into the store and find the Han Solo figure or the the tchotchke from the last family trip that can't be left behind when we go anywhere. So I definitely get it. Yeah.
So you're tuned in. You're tuned in, and that's pretty great. That's pretty great. Elizabeth in New Orleans, you're on with Mo Willems. Thank you for calling, Elizabeth.
Hi, it is such a pleasure to be on the line here. I am such a fan of Mo Willems, and you know I'm happily married, and I'm sure he is too. But if that wasn't
you are a fan, okay. Oh boy!
And I'll tell you, I'm a librarian here in New Orleans.
Oh well, thank you for what you do.
Yes, and I'll come up with any excuse to use your book in a story time. I mean, whatever the theme is, I'll try to pull in Mo Willems.
Why, Elizabeth?
Because when you read those words, they come alive in a way that every child understands. They bring out the child in you as a grown-up and as a reader, and children love that. To see you be silly makes them feel so good.
Elizabeth, I will say New Orleans is my hometown, and I do mm-hmm. think a lot of my storytelling comes from New Orleans. I had sort of a dissolute teenage years. And I feel like the point of New Orleans is everybody sits around in a cafe or a bar and they tell stories about stupid things they've done. And when they run out of them, they go out and they go do more stupid things so that they can come back with a better story.
The beautiful tragedy.
Elizabeth, you're our pro here. You're a librarian. You describe the effect of these books, but how do you think Mo Willems achieves it? What is it about the way he puts them together, the words, the pacing, the illustration that achieves that, Elizabeth?
Well, I'll tell you exactly what it is. It's something that Shel Silverstein also had, and Maury Sendak also had. And it's the child inside of the author. It's a connection to those beautiful moments of the past and the present, the little things in life that we consider mundane. But as a child, they're everything. It's a connection to that Mo Willems has. And it's a beautiful thing, and it's a rare thing.
That's beautiful
to
hear.
Wow, that's very sweet, Elizabeth. Thank you.
From Mo Willems' hometown.
Thank you. The children of New Orleans, thank you, too. Thank you, Mo Willems.
All right. Rock on.
Thanks. From hometown, from Mo Willems in New Orleans. You talked not so long ago with Rivka Galchin. She wrote it up for The New Yorker. And, we just heard that theory of connection to childhood. But Rivka came up with another theory. She looked at this evidence that, many big children's authors, very beloved and successful, Beatrix Potter, no children. Maurice Sendak, no children. Margaret Wise Brown, Goodnight Moon, no children. Tove Jansson, no children. Dr. Seuss, no children. And she points out even you began writing for kids before you had a child. Mm-hmm. And she has this theory. She says, Tove Jansson said began her Moomin series during the Second World War. Paddington Bear was modeled on the Jewish refugee children turning up alone in London train stations. Arnold LaBelle, creator of the Frog and Toad books, came out to his children as gay and died relatively young from AIDS. She says, I wonder if the truer unity among children's book authors is sublimated outrage at the adult world. If they're going to serve someone, it's going to be children. What did you make of that?
I think that there's something to that. I did not enjoy my childhood, but I think for me the leap is that childhood, even a great childhood, is inherently unfair. You know, there are all these messages from day one that says that you're not important. The furniture is not to your size. The mm-hmm. door handles are not to your size. Mm-hmm.
A mess to a kid. Right?
Everything is huge. It's mm-hmm. all built for someone else. You don't get to decide when you go to the bathroom. You mm-hmm. are instructed when that happens. And then when's the last time you've been in a business meeting with your staff and somebody said, Tom, go to the bathroom.
Okay, right?
It would be insulting. Or yes. even if you're having a good time, and this is the worst.
Or if they said, just go
time,
try. Yeah, so don't say
right,
that.
Exactly. Try. Come back. Right. But if you're having a good time, two giant arms at any point can come and lift you out of that fun And if you complain, it's your fault. Again, imagine you're at a cocktail party and you meet somebody really interesting and you're finding out about them. And this huge hand comes from the ceiling and puts you in your bed.
Right. Or a stroller and rolls you away.
It's right. And straps you in.
Well.
It's horrific.
Mm. Does that go all the way to sublimated outrage at injustice in the world? What about your politics?
Well, you know, my politics are separate from my books. Mm-hmm. So I put in 49% of the book. I have a moral center to my books. I don't know what they're going to mean. And certainly I read people getting things out of my books that are perhaps not what I thought I put in them. I tell the story that my first two reviews for Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, they were positive. And one said, I love this book because it teaches kids the value of never giving up, of always striving and trying. Yeah. And the next reviewer said, I love this book because it tells kids when to stop and what they can't do and when it's time for them to give up.
Right.
And they're both right. They're bringing in, you know, I think my job in terms of my books, maybe not as a citizen, but my job in my books is to try to get you in touch with these questions. And I'm perhaps less interested in where you end up. As an individual, I have very political feelings about the state of the world and the state of honesty in the world. And for me in particular, the state of expertise. I think just overall, we have lost empathy and a respect for expertise. But that's me. That's not my books.
I want to come back to that, but I want to get this call. Dennis is calling from Sandy Hook, Connecticut, an address we know well. Dennis, thank you very much for calling. You're on the air with Mo Willems.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mo. How are you?
Hi.
I'm fine. Thank you, Dennis.
Good, good. I want to talk a little bit about Mo's visit to Sandy Hook School. I think it was it 2 years ago, Mo, when
yeah.
he came? And
yeah, something
the
like
kids,
that.
After the shooting.
Yeah, it was. Mm-hmm. Yes, after the tragedy. Yes, yes. What an uplifting experience. We were at the temporary school at the time while they were building the new school.
Did you have a child who was at the school at the shooting time, Dennis?
Or? Yes, I did.
Directly engaged with that, or
he was one classroom down from what happened. And
oh boy.
As a matter of fact, his teacher got shot in the foot, so it was very. And I was down there at the time, so it was obviously, you know, it's beyond words. That's probably another
of course.
Show, but, you know.
Well, yeah. Of course. What about his effect on the effect on your son? And Mo's visit.
Well, I mean, the effect on the children was one thing, okay, because they were happy and, you know, it's a little time off from class. Great. And they loved the books. But the parents and the teachers, you know, were like, you know, grabbing the kid. You're going to meet Mo Willems. You know, it was so uplifting on so many different levels. Just the excitement in a place where obviously there was little excitement or, you know, happiness for such a long time.
Why did Mo's visit?
Well, Dennis,
why
Dennis, did, this is this sorry. Is really. Yeah. I was asked to come and mm-hmm. I came, and I be honest, it was one of the hardest school visits that I had ever done because I was
hard stuff.
In shock. And as an individual, just feel that the proliferation of arms is absurd.
Right.
I really didn't know if I was going to be able to get through it. And I knew that my job was to get through it. And to be honest, it was the kids, man. It was the kids that just made me fly. They were so open and there and real and responsive that it turned out to be just a beautiful experience for me. So I went in with this sense of dread. I don't know if I can handle it. And I didn't have to because the kids made it joyous.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we do choose love around here. That's a theme. And you probably felt that when you came out because, you know, you come in one way and you go out another. But anyways, the books, my kids read them obviously before that, and when they were littler, and then after that, even after a tough day, you know, either for myself or my kids, I'll have him read me the book, you know, like the,
that's great.
Let the pigeon drive the bus, you know what I mean? And
well, you know, the time together is the key, too, man. You guys just communicating. I appreciate that it's my books, but I got to be honest, it could be the phone book. You guys just together is beautiful.
Dennis in Sandy Hook, Connecticut. Our love goes to you. The theme there, Dennis says, is choose love, and Mo Willems was there to help them make that choice go that way. Good luck to you, Dennis. Never really there. Our thoughts remain with Sandy Hook. Mo Willems is with us this hour, celebrated children's book author. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. We're talking this hour. Very happy to be joined by the celebrated children's book author and illustrator Mo Willems, creator of Elephant and Piggy, Knuffle Bunny, Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus, and a whole lot more. A real master of child and adult humor, and more than humor, and of insights that child and adult share or work their way to, toward, through his illustrations, and the rather spare number of words in a given Mo Willems book, but a whole universe in there. You can join us this hour. What's your question for the master here? What do you want to say to Mo Willems? What's the pleasure he's brought to your little Knuffle Bunny, to you? Mo Willems' latest book is Nanette's Baguette. And Mo, would you read a little bit of that for us?
I will set it up. So Nanette's Baguette is the story of young Nanette, who is getting her first baguette by herself. The bakery is across the street. It's a mm-hmm. small French village.
Mm-hmm. It's a big deal that her mother, she's a frog, her mom's a frog, and it's a big deal that her mom has said, hey, you go get the baguette this time.
She gets to go get the baguette, but unfortunately on the way back, baguettes are wonderful. So
irresistible.
She eats the baguette piece by piece by piece. So I'm going to read it at the discovery that she has in fact eaten the entire baguette.
Okay.
There is no more baguette. Nanette begins to fret. Will Mom be upset? Will Mom regret she let Nanette get the baguette? Kaboom! Clouds have been coming in. Rain comes down. Now Nanette is wet. Wet with no baguette. This is as bad as it can get. Nanette wishes Mom had never let Nanette get that baguette. Maybe Nanette will move to Tibet. Tibet is as far away as you can get. Nanette would need a jet. Can Nanette go home instead? Can Nanette face her mom? What will she do?
That's just great. That's great. And your shamectomy has been very effective.
Thank you.
I'm ready. I'm in.
Some of the best clowns in New York have operated on me.
That is fantastic. And of course, it works out. We'll let readers discover themselves how it works out. But it is not quite the tragedy, ultimately, that little Nanette fears. We've got Kevin calling from Reading, Massachusetts. Kevin, thank you for calling. You're on the air with Mo Willems.
Hi.
Hi, Kevin. How are you doing?
Oh, hi, Kevin. How are you?
Good.
How old are you, Kevin?
Six.
You're six? I'm 49, Kevin.
What are you doing home today, Kevin? It's not a snow day.
I just got home from school and I'm in the car.
Oh. Ah. Oh, okay. Wow, amazing. So you're on the cell phone. You're on the mobile.
Yes.
Do you read Mo Willems' books? What's your favorite ones, Kevin?
All of them.
Like what?
You are going to be my PR agent. I like this Kevin guy.
Which ones do you like best, or which ones have you read?
I like all of them the same.
Kevin, I have a question for you. Do you sometimes draw my characters and make up your own stories?
No.
No? I would encourage that, you know, because I make all my drawings, all my characters really simple so that you can draw the character and then you can do something which is called infringing on my copyright. It's really fun.
Kevin, when do you read these? Do you read them at bedtime or just any time or when with your mom or dad or parents?
I used to read them, but now I like other books too. And I read those.
Yeah. Oh, so are you finished with Mo's books, or you still like them?
I still like them.
Phew! That's good. And if you could be one of the characters in one of his books, if you could be one of them, who would you want to be, Kevin? Elephant? Piggy? Knuffle Bunny? Gone?
I'm thinking.
Oh, excuse me, of course. What do you think?
Pigeon.
That's the sound of his...
Pigeon.
Yeah, and why?
I'll tell you something about the pigeon. Do you know what his first name is? His first name is The.
The Pigeon. Hey, Kevin, I really appreciate your calling. 6 years old and on the air with Mo Willems. That's pretty cool. I hope you have a lot of...
Thank you, Kevin.
Yeah.
Take care. Happy reading, dude.
Keep reading. Read a lot, Kevin. You go. Thanks a lot for calling. Let me get one more, if I may, from Montreal in Canada. Quebec, Grace is calling. Thanks, Kevin. Grace, you're on the air with Mo Willems.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Mr. Willems.
Hi.
So I experienced you early on with teaching to French speakers. I was an English teacher of French students from pre-K through third grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I really took to heart what you said in at the beginning of the show about... Well, you're very modest in saying that it's 49% what you do and 51% performance. But I have to say with...
I think it's laziness more than modesty, but thank you.
Well, no, because it's a really fine art that I think it gets overlooked often. Some people think they could just sit down and whip out a kid's book. But it's a perfect balance that allowed me to get a classroom of 23 kids that didn't know any English at all to sit down and listen, and they got it too. They got the story, and
that's great.
Your books were a go to.
Well, thank you. Well, you know, the simple and easy are not the same thing.
No, it takes
a lot of time.
Yep, and I think for older kids, I mean, more wordy stories that works. But I have three boys. My eight-year-old still loves your books. And he reads them now to his younger brothers. So, but I have to say, it was magic in the classroom for kids that didn't know English. And I performed, for sure, but they got the story. They understood. And as you were saying earlier, Tom, just not many words necessarily on a page, but that's really useful for what I do.
Absolutely. Grace, I so appreciate your call. Hey,
thank you, Grace.
Yeah, thank you. From Montreal there. I was reading in that same piece about how back in 1999, you and your wife Cher had rented a place in Oxford, England for a month, and your goal was to write a great children's book. And she reports there that you wrote and illustrated 5 books during that month, and none of them were published. What was the problem? What did you learn? What hump did you get over? How did you get out of that?
Well, you know, I think it's trying to anticipate what you think the audience wants is a mistake. You know, you don't write what you think people think will think will be thought of as funny. You just are funny. So my job is not to give people what they want. It's to give them what they don't know that they want yet. And so it has to be original to me. It has to be shocking to me. And I think when I first was trying, I was writing things that were safe, that were things that I had seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a real simple trick when you're coming up with a story or a character or something like that now, not back then, but now you can just Google it. If you Google that title and it comes up a billion times, that's probably not the story to be told.
Mm-hmm.
But if you, you know, put in "Don't let the pigeon drive the bus," whatever it was 15, 20 years ago, probably that sentence was less common.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're in the right, going in the right direction.
We used to have a game in my house where we would just sit around coming up with sentences that we thought had a fair chance had never been said before anywhere in history, which is pretty tall order, but it was fun. It was fun to try, and it would take us right out there. You talk a lot about empathy and failure as themes.
Mm-hmm.
How did you come to those? How do they work their way into the books?
Well, I mean, failure was pretty easy. I fail constantly, and that has been a recurring theme in my life. So in that sense, you're writing what you know. And empathy, I think actually it comes from being a cartoonist. You know, we at our house, most evenings, we put out a giant piece of butcher block paper, tape it to the dining room table, and after dinner, we sit there and we sketch and we draw. And the act of drawing, of doodling, is in fact a physicalized version of empathy. When a child draws, they start with a character and then they say, this character is a villain. So now they're thinking about the character. Oh, it's a villain and it has a, whatever, a sword or a cape. And the drawings arrive chronologically. When you look at a child's drawing, it may look like a mess, but ask them what came first, what came second. The world gets bigger and bigger, but just by act of putting a crayon to a piece of paper, you're thinking about someone. What do they like? Are they standing? Are they sitting? Who are they? So I draw every day a lot, and so I'm empathizing all the time with these fictional characters. It can only help for me to become a more empathetic individual and to become a more empathetic writer.
You put in a fair chunk of time at Sesame Street doing television for children. What's the fundamental difference between books for children and TV for children?
Well, I mean, one of the great differences is anonymity. You know, I learned how to write there, and it was never, you know, if I messed up, the Muppets made it funny. Nobody would say, oh, seems like a terrible Mo Willems line that Elmo just said. So that was a real advantage. You know, television is prescribed. It's a very expensive medium. It takes a lot of money. And so it becomes a little bit more conservative in terms of what you can do and how you can experiment. You know, we did the studio did not like a lot of failure in our bits. When I make a book, I have total control and the book is cheap to make. If the book flops, nobody's going out of business. So it allows me to really experiment. I'm overjoyed. My time at Sesame Street was like going to graduate school. I learned so much about writing, and I got a lot of my bad writing out there. So for me, it was this wonderful laboratory. But when it came time to try to express myself, the issues that mattered to me, I could only do that through books.
This is sensitive and maybe hard, but we also read in that New Yorker piece that and it surprised me because so many parents sit so intimately with their children when they read your books that you are, at 49, estranged from your parents.
Yeah, it's unfortunate.
All kinds of things happen in the world. I get that. But still, how do you think about that? I mean, you're Mr. Empathy.
You know, look, I have a rule when I do readings that you can ask me anything you want, and I promise that I will answer anything I want. So I think we're going to move on.
Fair enough. But you can imagine how parents would sit and think, the guy who puts so much webbing between me and my kids, you know, so much connection. It's interesting. Pam in Boston. Pam, thank you for calling. You're on there with Mo Willems.
Oh, thank you. Hi, Tom. I love your show. I listen all the time. This is the first time I've ever gotten on. But Mr. Williams, oh, my goodness, I wrote to you several years ago, just before you wrote "Naked Mole Rat Gets Dressed," and because my grandson was about 3 years old, he had just been diagnosed with Asperger's, and I was reading "There's a Bird on My Head," and it was the first time he ever giggled out loud as I read to him, and I was so touched by that because
that's magic.
Oh, it was so magical! I can't even tell you, and so I've never written to a celebrity or an author, but I wrote to you because it meant so much to me. And you sent me a poster of Naked Mole Rat, and you signed it. And I cherish that poster so much. I framed it, and I'm saving it for my grandson. And I want you to know that now he's 11, and he has a little brother who's 4, and he reads your books to his little brother. And
that's awesome.
Oh my gosh. You know, I mean, it was just a small thing, but you know what? When he giggled, my heart just like busted out of my chest. I'm like, oh my goodness, this book is so funny. And it really was funny.
A breakthrough. A real breakthrough.
A real breakthrough, and we love Gerald and Piggy books. We read them all the time. I think we have every Gerald and Piggy book you ever wrote, as Elephant and Piggy.
My daughter's orthodontist thanks you for that.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Williams. You are gifted. You have a real gift to give to children. You truly do. So thank you.
Thank you, Pam.
Best to your grandkids.
Thank you. Yeah, explicit politics do not show up in your books, but you've had an exhibit recently where it was a little more political, more toward the world, posters there, you know, enough with the hate. What are your political thoughts these days?
So I'm going to have an exhibit. There's a gallery in Northampton, Mass., where I live, where there are drawings that I've been reacting to what's been going on. And if you go to my Twitter feed, which is the_pigeon, you probably have to dig a little, but you can sort of see them. I'm personally was going from angry drawings to trying to find positive drawings, to try and find things, sort of universal truths that we could all agree on. Hate is a bad thing. So that we can sort of have a baseline to start a conversation, and a conversation where I don't have to agree with everybody, but where we accept that there are certain things that we as Americans and we as human beings agree are good for those around us. The exhibit is opening up in March, and we're going to have a poster. The show is called You Are Not Alone, because I feel that that's important. If you're being marginalized in some way for what you believe, for who you are, for how you are who you are, probably the closest that I've gotten to it is in the book Naked Mole Rat Gets Dressed, where the fundamental question of whether this naked mole rat should be allowed to wear clothing is answered by a second question, which is, why not? Why not? If there's an answer, then don't do it. But if there isn't, just let it go.
There's a little insight about freedom right there, I guess. Why not? Mo Willems, it's been great to have you with us. Really great. Thanks.
Thank you, Tom.
Yeah, really wonderful. Nanette's Baguette is the latest. Look for Welcome, a Mo Willems guide for new arrivals coming up. Good luck. Thanks for joining us today, Mo.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. And thanks to all the callers. Really, really great to hear their voices.
They are the best. I'm Tom Ashbrook with Mo Willems. This is On Point.